The corruption within the United States Capitol Police is being exposed today. Steve Baker joins us to map all of it out. Well, America, it is riot season, and Julio Rojas was there front and center when the BLM terrorists went wild for Kyle Rittenhouse's speech. We'll bring you the latest. There's been a back and forth regarding Texas's new legislation that was passed, SB 4. The Supreme Court was allowing Texas to move forward and implement that law by arresting illegals, but then an appeals court said, hold on. Well, Brandon Walton is joining us to detail the very latest with that. That RICO isn't a crime. That's according to Congresswoman AOC. We'll bring you the latest on Citizen Free Press's headlines. All that and more on the Brianna Morello Show. Happy Thursday, everyone. Thank you for joining us tonight. We're so appreciative of your viewership, of course. And well, we're just one day away from the weekend, so there is so much that we have to go through. And well, let's just jump right into it. As many of you know, we're going to have a crazy, crazy year of news headlines. And so what I always turn to kind of understand and dissect what's going on around the world is I go to citizenfreepress.com. That's where Keane and his staff are actually posting all of the latest headlines to keep you in the know. They're better than anyone. I'm telling you, anyone. They get about 13 million view pages a day. Plus, they actually hit 14 million last month. So everyone's going to Citizen Free Press. So you should too. Now, I just jumped on. There's a couple of headlines that stood out to me that I want to tell you about. First off, yesterday, Congresswoman, I love this. And this is what they have on their website right now. AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, got slaughtered when she just said that. And this is so funny. This is during a hearing with one of Hunter Biden's associates. And ultimately, she's going back and forth with him to say, name a crime that Joe Biden's committed. Name a crime. What did you witness? And so he goes on and he cites RICO. He cites a whole bunch of other things, selling, you know, state secrets, obviously. And she's like, RICO isn't a crime. Well, that's good news for Fulton County defendants who are being charged under RICO. Obviously, RICO is a crime. Normally, it's prosecuted by the federal government, not the state. That's what's so impressive about what's going on in Fulton County. But again, AOC highlighting how stupid she really is. I mean, she's one of the dumbest members of Congress, not the dumbest, of course, because, well, her favorite group of people that she hangs out with all the time are probably some of the stupidest. So it's a contest. Obviously, she's fired up and she keeps cutting him off. Also, when he's detailing about how it is a crime. And well, you know, her stupidity always seems to win because she grabs back the mic, takes back, reclaims her time. And the woman's just the moron. Let's jump into another headline that is on CFP's website right now. Looks like Apple is being sued, of course. And well, you know, they're saying it's because it's being sued by the Biden administration's Department of Justice, which is always interesting when they're getting involved. And well, obviously, Tim Cook, as you can see on CFP's website, isn't really bothered by the DOJ's news right now that they're suing him. He's been partying in Asia. But ultimately, what is the DOJ going after Apple for? Well, listen, anytime the DOJ is involved right now in the last 3 years, I am just skeptical of anything they accuse someone or a company of. So again, remember that. But they are going after Apple right now, and they're saying that they have a monopoly in the landmark antitrust case. They're ultimately saying that Apple is kind of just running a monopoly when it comes to the phone market, harming consumers, developers, and rival companies. Apple's ecosystem, from the Apple Watch to Apple Pay, supports just like the monopoly that they've been able to control. And obviously, that's the case. There's only really two companies when it comes to making phones that you at home could turn to. And I mean, it's not been a secret. So I'm always skeptical. I'm always wondering, well, is Apple not donating enough money to the Democratic Party? Is that why they're doing all this? So again, folks, I don't know. I don't trust anything that comes out of this Department of Justice, and neither should you. Let's head back over to CFP's website because, well, things are getting a little crazy. If you guys recall, I actually spoke about this on Owen Schroyer's show on yesterday on InfoWars, and it's about the illegals who are coming into our country, and now they are trying to claim squatter rights in blue cities and states like New York. And so now these illegals are actually creating TikTok videos to tell other illegals how they can live in people's, Americans' homes for free. And so that's what CFP is pointing out. Illegal Alien explains to TikTok followers how to become a squatter, the new American dream for invaders. And we'd have to agree with that. That's exactly what this is. It's disgusting. It's Americans who are now going to be probably bankrupt because of all of this. You know, one homeowner in one video was actually literally, she was arrested. And just for confronting her squatter, let's grab that footage. I think I have that. Hold on a second. It's so disgusting that they just continue. I can't type today, guys. They continue to do all of this. And I mean, here's the footage of her being arrested. Oh, sorry. This is a joke. They have Eric Adams saying New York has a brand as she's getting arrested. And look, the NYPD is arresting her. They don't arrest people for crimes normally, folks. But they will arrest a law-abiding citizen who's trying to protect her property from people who are illegally living there and using false leases to claim property rights. It's just disgusting. These people are repulsive. Let's pop up over to CFP's website because they've got this interesting 25 most expensive cities in the U.S. And well, I hate to tell you folks, they're all blue states, of course, of course, of course. So obviously, when you go down the list, my old home, New York City, is number one, of course. And Americans, you have to make $138,000 to live comfortably in New York City. And I can attest to that, even though it's a cesspool, it's a very expensive cesspool to live in. And then it goes on to naming San Jose, California, and it goes on to more California, Boston, San Diego, California again, San Francisco again, California, Seattle, again, Oakland, which is another cesspool. I mean, all these are cesspools. I can't imagine anyone wanting to live there. Arlington, Virginia. Again, guys, these are all cesspools, this entire list. So no surprise there, folks, that it's very expensive to live in Democratic-controlled cities and states. I wonder why. And again, folks, that is everything that just recently caught my eye right now on citizenfreepress.com. They're always updating the website, so you should head over there right now and see what you are missing. I'm telling you, there's so much to unpack here. There's hundreds of headlines and stories that you should look into. So again, head over to citizenfreepress.com right now for the very latest. And if you enjoyed that segment, make sure you guys subscribe to our YouTube and Rumble page. And if you're listening on any of the podcasting platforms as well, make sure you guys subscribe as well so you get all the updates regarding what episodes we are dropping and the most exclusive content. You guys will get access to that as well. And leave us some feedback. We greatly, greatly appreciate that. And give us a thumbs up or a 5-star review. Again, it helps with the algorithm and it gets the word out. So we're very, very grateful for that. And again, folks, this is an independent show. I am an independent journalist. I don't have any big sponsors like Pfizer or anything. So if you're interested in supporting independent journalism, head over to supportbree.com. That's supportbree.com. You can either make a one-time donation or a monthly donation, and it's at whatever dollar amount you would like to set it to. So again, folks, that's supportbree.com. And well, we greatly appreciate anything you could send our way. We'll be right back after this.
To celebrate the new year, we're having the biggest sale ever on overstock clearance and brand new products. For example, save 60% on our Goose Down Comforters, the best comforters ever. They go perfectly with our MyPillow bed sheets and duvet covers. Save 25% on our brand new kitchen towels. They're made with the same technology as our famous My Towels. Our initial quantities are extremely low, so get them now before they go. Our seasonal flannel sheets are finally in. You save up to 50% and they sell out fast every year, so order now. They're truly the best flannel sheets you'll ever sleep on. Or save up to 80% on all our clearance items. And this is where it gets even better. For a limited time, your entire order ships absolutely free. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use that promo code to get deep discounts on all MyPillow products. And for a limited time, your order ships absolutely free.
Remember when Joe Biden blocked Americans from having access to life-saving medications during the pandemic? Well, even the most prepared Americans weren't prepared for what they had in store for us. We've learned anything from 2020, it's that we all need to be prepared. And the best way to do so is with the medical emergency kits from The Wellness Company. It's one of the best things you can do for you and your family, and you won't find anything like it in stores or at the pharmacy. This prescription kit contains 8 life-saving medications, including ivermectin, amoxicillin, and Z-Pak, plus a guide that tells you exactly how to use all of these tools. Every American should have at least one of these kits right now in their homes. And ordering these kits is super, super easy. It takes less than 2 minutes to do, folks. Go to twc.health/Brianna. That's twc.health/Brianna. And when you use promo code Brianna, you'll get 10% off plus free shipping. That's what you guys get for just listening to today's program. It's amazing. Again, folks, that's twc.health/Brianna. Now, once you pay, you'll have to fill out a form. It's an intake form, of course. And then you'll get these products sent directly to your door. No waiting for an expensive doctor's visit. And let's be honest, guys, they're not going to give you these prescriptions if you do head over to the doctor. All 8 prescriptions will be at your doorstep in approximately 2 weeks. And you know what, folks? Honestly, it's about the same cost as a doctor's visit, probably even a little less. So again, folks, you've got to head over right now to twc.health/Brianna. And then when you use promo code Brianna, you're going to get 10% off and free shipping just for listening to today's program. It's riot season, baby. You know, it's an election year, so we have to get this stuff going now. That's what the scene looked like yesterday after Kyle Rittenhouse spoke at a University of Memphis event. It was for Turning Point USA, of course. And while all of those ignorant people were enraged and, well, showing that they are pedophile sympathizers, because let's be honest, Kyle Rittenhouse did society a great, great duty when he took out the society's worst of the worst. Somebody literally was accused of raping and convicted of raping children. And well, they're fired up because sadly they don't understand why Kyle Rittenhouse is able to speak at Turning Point USA events and why he was not convicted amongst the jury of his peers. And so, yeah, they're all just sitting there. They're fired up. They're making this a race issue, and it's not a race issue. Sadly, it's just ignorance for these folks. Let's bring in the man who was there and brought us this footage. Let's bring in Julio Rojas. He's an independent journalist, and he's also the man behind mostlypeaceful.live. Julio, thank you for joining us. We greatly appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me.
All right. So it's riot season kicking off. Obviously, you're the expert in all of this. You were there for the 2020 riots that took place during the Summer of Love. And now we're just starting to see all this take place. You know, earlier today, we also saw riots breaking out at our southern border, but we won't talk about that right now. We'll focus on what happened yesterday with Kyle Rittenhouse. So explain to us, number one, you were with the protesters. Was this organized by a certain left-leaning group, or were these just students who were so outraged that Kyle Rittenhouse was exercising his First Amendment rights by speaking at their college?
So the student groups that were represented was the university's NAACP chapter. Also, the Black Student Association was out there. Unsurprisingly, a few professors were there as well. So it was organized in that sense. There's also some alumni who decided to show up and protest, and some local people from Memphis as well. So I would say that, you know, it was fine over, like, at the beginning. The reason what kind of set this off with this video that you just showed, so Kyle was already gone. The event was already done. Kyle was gone. He was not on campus when that was taking place. They noticed the crowd. They noticed that the Turning Point chapter and Turning Point staff were leaving the building. It was very quick because they realized that, oh, we can rush, because, you know, it was campus police with some Tennessee state troopers. So they were vastly outnumbered by this crowd. I'd say the crowd was about 200, 250 at that point. And they bum rushed. And I was later told that the Turning Point people, they asked as they were leaving the building, they asked the state trooper, "Are you guys escorting us out?" And the response was, "Well, that's up to you." And like, because the initial thought, or there was some misunderstanding, I guess, that they assumed that the campus police were going to be the ones to escort the Turning Point people away. But once they started moving and they start seeing the mob start just rushing at them, then the Tennessee state troopers and the campus police just at the last minute formed a phalanx to try to keep the people from attacking them. I mean, that's what they were going to do. That if they had the opportunity, they were going to attack the Turning Point staff and chapter members. And so it didn't end there, because this was a parking garage where this was leading to, and the students and the mob realized that there's only one entrance and exit that they have to leave through. So they went around towards that entrance and exit to prevent them from leaving, which is weird because their whole thing was, "We don't want you here, so you need to leave." Yeah. And now they're preventing them from leaving. So I, and again, it was just, they wanted to try to attack them, try to scare them, intimidate them. So thankfully, again, it was only because the police showed up at the last minute, they were able to push the crowd back and allow that pickup truck there to leave. But it was pretty hectic. It was about a hectic 15, 20 minutes. Yeah, the protest was very heated, but up until that point, it wasn't chaotic. But as these things tend to go, it doesn't take much to set these people off.
Yeah, it doesn't take much to set them off, and it's disturbing that they did all of this. Now, you said that obviously there was two different agencies there. Do you think they were prepared for this, or do you think they were just outnumbered?
Overall, I don't think they were as prepared as they should have been. I would say that I didn't expect it to be as crazy as it got, truth be told, just because Memphis, I was there for a BLM protest last year. They were rowdy, but they weren't rioting. Even in 2020, Memphis didn't actually experience the riots that the rest of the country did. So, but again, thankfully no one was hurt. No one, they didn't actually physically able to grab onto anybody. But it could have. I mean, if they could have. I mean, if the numbers were bigger, if the numbers were bigger on the protester side, I think things might have gone a little bit differently. So I think it was just kind of a combination of luck and the little bit of preparedness that they had. Because if it was just campus police, I think this might have turned out very, very differently.
Yeah. No, I'd have to agree with that. I wanted to jump into a soundbite of Kyle Rittenhouse actually discussing what happened, because the media is trying to make it seem like he ran and was chased off the stage, but he explains that he was only supposed to be there for 30 minutes. Let's take a listen.
It was quite interesting watching the videos and seeing some of the articles from the media saying that I got there at 4 o'clock. And
we're wizards.
Exactly. What were we doing sitting at a Bass Pro Shops at 4 o'clock?
We're at Bass Pro at 4 o'clock.
But anyways, great event. And I think it's funny that a lot of the media is saying we got booed off stage. In reality, we did a hard cutoff time and just happened to leave at that. Great event. Interesting people, to say the least. And both dogs, Milo and Odin, did a great job working together.
So it sounds like things were a little different than how the media is covering it, of course. You were there with the protesters. Do you think they understand who Kyle Rittenhouse is and what actually took place that day when he did shoot three people in self-defense?
They think they do. I mean, they were chanting, "He's a murderer." They were saying, "Protect people, not guns." And I did ask, I did do some interviews, and they'll be coming out with Turning Point Frontlines here in a little bit. But Yeah, I mean, it's just what we've been hearing since day one. Just that, oh, he's a white supremacist. This is white supremacy. He's a murderer. They were still talking about, like, oh, he crossed state lines with a rifle. And I said, that's not true. He only crossed state lines once after the shooting because it was bought in Wisconsin. And he said, oh, well, you know, my point still stands. so it just shows just how entrenched the false narratives about this case. I mean, look, yes, it was a little hard to kind of figure out what exactly happened in the first 24, 48 hours, but we had all the videos out there and we, you know, it was pieced together from start to finish. And it's pretty evident even way before the trial, of what happened. And now that we had the trial, I think it was a good thing the trial happened only in the sense that it did lay out everything in detail. Here's what happened and here's why the jury ruled the way they did. But obviously, you know, that was over the course of 2 weeks and not everyone's going to sit and watch the whole thing. And of course, during the trial, the media was, making it seem like the prosecution had a stronger case than they actually did. And so that's why some people were surprised with the verdict. So, we're going on 4 years and people still believe just like even on the small details, they get completely wrong, which of course then leads to the major details, the main details. They also get wrong on that aspect. So that's why he says he's out there. You know, some people ask, even people who were supporters or defenders of Kyle saying, well, why is he out? Why is he out there? You know, if it was me, I would just disappear and, you know, just avoid all this, which I totally understand that. But I understand from his perspective, he was slandered, you know, six ways to Sunday, being called a white supremacist, being called a terrorist, you know, for defending himself.
Yeah.
And so, of course, I can also understand why he would want to take a victory lap and to say, no, I was in the right. And here's why, you know, it's my First Amendment right to speak at a college university and a public funded university to explain my case. And this is how I'm going to do it. So that's why he decided to just kind of lean into the publicity. And also just the fact that I don't think that the left would leave him alone if, you know, they would try to find him and try to find, you know, dox him. I mean, that's their MO. So it's just a sad case where, you know, he was, from my view, I think he was just kind of forced into it just because if you gotta lean into the headwinds and, you know, that's the way to go about it without getting knocked over.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with that. I think he should be speaking out because the media bashed him for years and he cannot sue them now, sadly, for defamation. But he should be able to because I just think it's egregious what they did to him. And especially because he was so young and it's completely, I would say, ruined his life. Although he's, you know, out there, he's selling books. He's trying to get his face out there. He can't do basic things. I mean, he can't walk into a bar. He can't sit into a restaurant because you have to be fearful, or he could if he wants to, but he has to be fearful of people like that going after him and attacking him because they don't understand what happened that day. Kyle Rittenhouse's case is strictly a self-defense case. And the guy took out pedophiles. And ultimately, they look like pedophile sympathizers when they sit there and they pretend to advocate for this. And they make it seem like a race issue too. I saw one gentleman jump up while Kyle was speaking, asking questions, and he made it a race issue. But for Kyle, it wasn't a race issue and he didn't kill any black people that day. So when they go out there and say that, it just shows how ignorant they are. Is University of Memphis doing anything to kind of push back on the two professors like you cited and these students who did get violent and start threatening people who were just simply there to speak? Are they doing anything for punishments?
No, I don't. I think pigs flying would happen sooner than that. We'll see what happens. They have yet to put out a statement that I've seen. I will admit I have been traveling to back home since this morning. So that they might have released a statement or something. But, I mean, they did try. The school did try its best to just make this event not happen. I can confirm that the college did take over the ticketing to the event, which the Turning Point says that they gave the student groups a heads up to that. So they were able to secure that. That's why there were so many anti-Rittenhouse people who were able to get into the event because they were able to secure the tickets after the university took it over and it invalidated all the ones that people had. It was just So yeah, no, the college did not want this to happen at all, and they try to do their little ways of trying to not. And I guess they were partly successful in the regard that, you know, because Kyle did have a speech. There was supposed to be Q&A, and obviously there was some back and forth, but you know, the point was to educate, not to have this kind of screeching, you know, ree, you know, type of whole. Yeah. Thing that it kind of turned into. So, but you know what? It's everyone's alive. Everyone's alive. We got the videos, and you were, you know, showcasing, you know, this is what the left does. And it's still very much a big issue on college campuses, which then translates to it's going to be a problem later on in the real world.
Yeah, 100% it is, especially because we're not teaching these kids a valuable lesson, and that is the First Amendment, and Kyle has the right to speak up and talk and say what he wants, and Turning Point has a right to be there, and it's just disgusting. But this is the left, like you said. Julio Rojas, thank you for joining us again, folks. He's working on great, great projects, and like I mentioned, it's riot season, and Julio jumps right into the fray. He's fearless, so head over to mostlypeaceful.live to subscribe to his work. As I said, he's an independent journalist, and so this is how you support independent journalism. Julio, thank you. We appreciate your time, as always. You guys, I've said it once before, so I'm going to say it again. And under the Biden regime, I've never been more worried about my financial future. I called my good friend Dr. Kirk Elliott because I wanted to come up with a plan put in place to make sure I was secure, and he came with a plan for me to invest in silver.
I'm rich.
I've got my silver. I'm feeling so much better about my future. I highly recommend you give him a call and just chat with his team. 720-605-3900. Now, you could also head over to his website if you'd like to schedule an appointment. It's KirkElliottPhD.com/Brianna.
In a world where technology surrounds us, our exposure to EMR, or electromagnetic radiation, is higher than ever before. With over 400,000 cell towers and antennas in the United States alone, not to mention Wi-Fi that runs 24/7 in our home, cell phones that are carried in our pockets hours on end, and hundreds of 5G satellites in our orbit, common complaints are ringing in the ear, sleep deprivation, heart palpitations, insomnia, and so much more. Start protecting yourself now. Introducing Redemption Shield, your EMF protection products. With over 700 five-star reviews, Redemption Shield is leading the way in shielding and grounding products, taking inflammation out of your body with grounding bed mats, grounding bed sheets, hats, scarves, Wi-Fi router covers, cell phone bags. Come and see us today at RedemptionShield.com and get grounded and shielded. RedemptionShield.com. Use code BREE and save 10%.
Well, there's a new story out again today by Steve Baker, who I have to say has been on top of all of this J6 content that's going out, the news stories that are coming out, plus all the U.S. Capitol Police corruption and the DOJ corruption. And this one, well, it doesn't fall shy of being a bombshell. I mean, let's take a look at this article. So ultimately, I want to pull out this quote because I think it's so important. He's calling out U.S. Capitol Police for a couple of their members of their team, three of them, core ones, their team, were involved in a overtime scheme. And, well, of course, when this was brought to their attention, what did U.S. Capitol Police do? Well, some of them got promoted. That's how it goes with U.S. Capitol Police these days. And here to break down all of the details, of course, is the man behind the story, Steve Baker. Steve is one of the great investigative journalists over at The Blaze. Steve, you sent me this story and my jaw hit the ground because, I mean, we know there's corruption, right? But this one maps it out and it tells you that even though there was an investigation, these people were not fired and, in fact, were promoted internally. So tell us a little bit about your story and then the three key players in all of this.
Yeah, Brianna, thanks for having me back. And look, nobody is surprised by some government agency being corrupt. What makes the United States Capitol Police unique is it seems that the more corrupt you are and the more illegal schemes you're involved in or the more DUIs you have, the faster you rise up in rank at the United States Capitol Police. That's the surprising part of this story. Or is it surprising? Or is it because the characters that we're looking at are individuals that were involved specifically in part of what they call the dignitary protection detail. And as you know, we've addressed that before with Special Agent David Lazarus, who literally has gotten by with perjury in January 6th trial because he was the head of security for Nancy Pelosi at the time. Mm-hmm. And now we're looking at the career arc of others that were involved or assigned to the dignitary protection detail that are rising all the way to the highest level in rank at the Capitol Police. And, you know, this particular payroll scheme, which is basically something that I think they call it, it's like a backfilling scheme where they manipulate their overtime hours for additional pay. Mm-hmm. And there was three of these individuals involved in this scheme. One of them is Officer Sean Gallagher. The other one is Officer John Erickson. And the third was former officer Wendy Colmore. Now, just to kind of briefly overview this thing for everyone, what they were doing was they were stealing money. They were stealing money from the Capitol Police, essentially taxpayer money is what they were doing. And that was discovered by a lower ranking sergeant, you know, that's like had an office job. And she discovered this and she reported it. And when mm-hmm. she did, her name, I'm blanking.
Rhonda Henderson.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. And so when she reported it, at first they tried to, you know, brush it aside and didn't want it to get out. But she had the receipts, as they say, and she brought it forward, forced an investigation, what they call an OPR. And once they opened the OPR and began that process, then they discovered that these guys were involved in this scheme. In this scheme, not only were they stealing money, but there was forgery involved in this, all the way up to the supervisor, which was Sean Gallagher at the time, a captain. He was not only signing off on his lower ranking officer's participation in the scheme, but he was forging his name and using his supervisor's name and using different colored ink from his signature on the pay sheets that he submitted every 2 weeks. So according to Rhonda Henderson, they anticipate or they estimate that this scheme went over for right at about a year, give or take. And during this time, there was not only theft, but forgery, there was fraud. Then came the investigation. Then there was the lying and cover up that was part of it. Basically, all three of these characters and individuals were recommended by someone, a source of ours that was very close to this particular investigation, that they not only all be terminated, but then that this be turned over to the Department of Justice and referred to them as a criminal referral because these were felonies that these three officers committed.
Yes.
Capitol Police intervened, higher ranking officers intervened. And as a result, they literally got off with slaps on the wrist. And then the promotion started. Now, Wendy Colmore, she left shortly thereafter as a result of this investigation. And then she ended up, now she's a director of operations over at the Senate Sergeant at Arms office. And then John Erickson, who they call Teflon John at the department, he just got promoted in October to deputy chief.
Ah.
And then Sean Gallagher, the ringleader of that scheme, among other things that these characters were involved in, he just got promoted in October to assistant chief, and he is now the second ranking officer at the Capitol Police.
So committing felonies does pay. It gets you promoted in the U.S. Capitol Police, which is refreshing for our audience at home. If you were to do forgery, you would fake your hours or anything like that, steal from your employer, you would be terminated automatically, and you'd probably also end up in handcuffs. But it's refreshing to see that the U.S. Capitol Police are second chances for criminals, I guess would be the best way to look at this. Has the U.S. Capitol Police responded yet to your report? Because I think this deserves a response.
Well, no, we have not heard a response directly from them. Obviously, Blaze Media has reached out to them for a response. Yeah. We've not received that, and I doubt that we will, because even in our previous stories about Capitol Police, they will not respond. They tend to brush things under the rug, and that's what, you know, or sweep things under the rug, and that's what we anticipate. They will try to do again in this particular case, But I can tell you that all of this has also been referred over in detail, with much more detail than we've even released yet, to the congressional committee that provides oversight over the Capitol Police. So there will be investigations into this.
Yeah, well, it makes sense now, you know, when you map out all this corruption within the Capitol Police, why they're expanding across the country. You know, we've talked about it often, you and I, Steve, that they've opened up these satellite offices all across the country in all different states like Florida, Texas, and elsewhere. And so when it comes to corruption, they're definitely not an agency that I think is worthy of expanding. And there's really no reason for them to expand anyways, because they don't have jurisdiction here, but they do. And this is one of the big parts in all of this. They are exempt from FOIA requests. So even if you and I wanted to do our due diligence to go after them and like look into things, we can't, because they don't have to submit and comply with FOIAs, which I think is very, very fascinating. But that could also be a reason why they're expanding so quickly. I wanted to get your take on something else that came out yesterday. Mm-hmm. Julie Kelly published a tweet regarding the DOJ. I mean, the DOJ is responding to what's playing out right now with a DC appeals court ruling regarding enhancements, and that the enhancements really were wrongfully applied to a lot of J6er sentencings. So that what happens there is that now a lot of these J6ers can potentially have their sentences reduced. And we're talking about in the hundreds. So Matthew Graves' office, the people who are prosecuting you, Steve, because of you're doing such a great job, they are fired up about this. And they're pretty much saying, listen, if they get their enhancements dropped, we're going to go back and try to get the other sentences that were previously given the lesser charges appealed so that they could ask for more time now. Steve, it's something that you don't see often. You follow a lot of these court cases. We've never seen the DOJ appeal other non-related to J6ers sentences like they are here. What do you make of all of this? Because I find it to be quite disturbing.
I can distill this down to one four-letter word, maybe not one I'd like to use right now, but let's use the word evil. That's what this is. Wow. It's pure evil. And Matthew Graves of this world, and he's not the only one, this is an evil human being.
Yes.
Matthew Graves, I know you watch every single thing that I do, at least your staffers do. You're evil. This is not America. This is a situation where we're talking about, and Brianna, you and I have seen this in some of the trials already. We're seeing people that are, they are tried for a crime. They are then convicted of the crime. Yeah. And then during the sentencing of the crime, they receive enhancements for things that were never presented to the jury. Things they were never charged for, things they were never arrested for, things they were never convicted of. And they get to sentencing, and you learn there of something called terrorism enhancements.
Yeah.
And they throw in items that you were never came up in your court case. And this is exactly akin to what those types of it's just darkness. It's from the pit of hell is what it is. And now they're saying, OK, if the Supreme Court scuttles the 1512 obstruction of an official proceeding felony, OK. Well, you know what? We'll just go back and we will make your sentences on your crimes consecutive instead of concurrent. And we'll redo your sentencing and extend. We'll make your sentencing longer than it would have been otherwise with the felony on your record. And this is, like you said, this is going to affect hundreds of people. And this, to throw this threat, are they threatening the J6ers or are they threatening the Supreme Court? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what they're up to at this point, but I can tell you that from top to bottom, we are seeing pure evil, un-Americanism, totalitarianism. This is a transformation of our system. I mean, look, justice in this country used to set us apart. Our system of justice, the fact that we were innocent until proven guilty. You know, that right there is a miracle. That never existed in all of mankind until our framers put that into our Constitution. And then to have this type of situation taken away from us, where now that we can be convicted of and sentenced for things that they never even presented to a jury, it's unbelievable.
It is. It is. And sadly, it's the reason why people like Matthew Perna took his own life, because, you know, when he thought he was agreeing to a plea agreement, he was last minute by the prosecutors slapped with these enhancements. And it really scared the crap out of him. And sadly, it put him in a really bad situation. He took his own life as a result to it. Matthew Perner will never get justice, neither will his family, because right now we have a regime that's in power that doesn't care. They don't care about Matthew's story. The rest of us care. We're very compassionate about it. We're very heartbroken over it. But they continue to ignore a story like Matthew, and they didn't slow down after that happened when Matthew took his own life. They actually ramped things up. And then we heard, you follow the case, you were in the courtroom, when the judge, Judge Mehta, turned to Ken Harrelson during his sentencing and said, "I don't believe you're the person that the government's making you out to be." And then he slapped on a terrorist enhancement at the end of that. It's disgusting, especially because he is a veteran, and he's somebody who literally does not who would kill terrorists who are going to hurt us as Americans. He's not a terrorist. And again, there's so many J6ers with these stories. It's just disgusting. Matthew Graves' office, he is a communist, and there's no other way to describe it at this point. He has weaponized the Department of Justice, and they're using it to go after you, Steve, but mainly because you're reporting has been the best reporting that we've seen so far. There's nobody who's even coming anywhere near you at this point. You're dropping fact bombs. You're investigating things that other journalists aren't investigating. And that's what sets you apart from so many. And that's the reason why, sadly, you're being prosecuted. I know you're dropping a big bombshell tomorrow. This is one that I am going to be looking forward to reading. So give us a little hint. Give us a little teaser. Don't tell us too much, though.
Yeah, I'm actually not allowed to give you too much, but I have been given a little bit of leeway here. Essentially, this, Brianna, is that going back to our story on Special Agent David Lazarus. Now, this is the story that we first presented in October without the video. And then after Speaker Johnson was awarded, you know, the speakership, Mike Johnson, then we were given permission to release the video of this, which proved beyond any shadow of a doubt that the testimonies that he and Officer Dunn, Harry Dunn, gave in the first Oath Keepers trial were lies. They were absolute falsehoods. And then we knew some other things that we weren't able to release at that time. And now we have been given the green light. And so what we are going to show tomorrow is that this thing that I've known about for at least 8 months now, going back, that Special Agent Lazarus had a previous disciplinary action back 8 years ago with Capitol Police on the Dignitary Protection Detail, which should have, first of all, resulted in a termination. He should not have even been an employee of the Capitol Police on January 6, 2021. Secondarily, even if he had been, because of the nature of his terminable crime that he committed in that that investigation, that information should have been released to the defense teams so that they could have impeached, at the very least, impeached his testimony. But as it is, as we learned, not only was that information not turned over to the defense teams about his previous investigation, but more importantly, as a result of all of what we know now, is that it seems to be some collusion directly between DOJ and the Capitol Police in covering this up, because now we know that after our story through Blaze Media came out in October, that in fact the United States Capitol Police did open an investigation into our report of David Lazarus, and then they buried it. And at the very least, we know that the DOJ was consulted in that investigation.
Nothing surprises me here, Steve Baker. This is going to be a bombshell tomorrow. Again, I don't use that lightly. I'm not like Sean Hannity. But I really do think this is going to be an insane story, mainly because, you know, you've been working on this for quite some time. This is the reason why the Department of Justice wanted to silence you, and they put you in like irons, because they know that you are getting to the core of all of this, and that they wrongfully put Americans in prison just because of their political beliefs. And so that's what they're working on now. Steve, this story is about to drop tomorrow in the Blaze. Is that correct?
That's correct. It'll. I don't think we'll hold this one to noon like we did the one yesterday. But this is. I don't think we're going to have any problems with our legal department signing off on every dotted I and every cross T this time, because we actually have the receipts.
I love that. I love that. Well, guys, if you're watching right now, if you're listening right now, you got to go follow Steve on Twitter. It's very important. He's also, you can find his work over at tpc4usa.com. And you can also find it over at The Blaze. That's where that story is going to drop tomorrow. So make sure you're heading over to theblaze.com to look at all their work, because I'm telling you guys, that's where all of this is going to drop tomorrow. So Steve, I appreciate everything that you do. Thank you so much. And for our audience, again, you got to pay attention. You got to follow Steve, because this stuff is extremely, extremely important. And it's a game changer for how they're prosecuting J6ers. So thank you, Steve. We appreciate it. Things are a little confusing right now in Texas. Many of you guys may have heard about SB4. It's Texas's way of defending themselves against the invasion. SB4 was their way of arresting illegals who were invading our country. Well, it was back and forth. The Supreme Court ruled that they could now enforce the rules. And then according now to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, it's been put back on pause. And it's been a massive back and forth and really kind of difficult to follow. So don't take my word for it. Let's talk to somebody who's been following all of this. Let's bring in Brandon Waltons. He is the host of the Daily Headlines over at Texas Scorecard. Brandon, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for having me on again.
Well, we're excited to talk about this because it was a big back and forth. I know a lot of conservatives were celebrating when the Supreme Court allowed Texas to start implementing this law. And then it was quickly, in the middle of the night, I mean, most people kind of were sleeping. They didn't even realize it happened. It was quickly put on pause by the appeals court. So give us an update. Where are we currently with SB4?
Yeah, so just to start, SB4, Senate Bill 4, is this law passed by Texas last year, was supposed to go into effect on March 5th, so the 5th of this month, just a couple weeks ago. And essentially what it does is it creates a state penalty, a state crime for entering the country illegally, entering Texas illegally. And so the idea of this is that rather than depend on Border Patrol, that is just processing, letting these people go under the Biden administration's directives, that instead the state would have an option to be able to arrest these people and say, you can either go to jail or we can send you back across the border. And if you come back, the fines and jail time will be even more. That was the purpose of Senate Bill 4. Well, of course, once it's signed into law, you have the usual suspects coming out and suing, saying that, oh, this is unconstitutional. You had the ACLU, you had the Biden Justice Department filing lawsuits. And so where this is right now, there's a little bit of confusion. I mean, it changed literally by the hour. Depending on when you were looking at this story earlier this week, is that a lower court essentially put a stay on it, said, okay, Texas can't enforce this law. We don't think it's constitutional. That was appealed to the Fifth Circuit, who said, no, wait, Texas can enforce it. That was sent to the Supreme Court, who said, we're going to hold it. But then they said, okay, never mind, you can't enforce it while it goes through the process. And then it went back to the Fifth Circuit, who said, you have to hold it again. Now, very confusing stuff. It's getting lawyers confused when they're going through this, because it's literally like procedure stacked on procedure stacked on procedure. The most important thing to take away here, though, is that none of this so far from the Fifth Circuit or the Supreme Court, most importantly, none of it's on the merit of the law. None of it's about whether or not it's actually a constitutional law. It's all about procedure and whether or not that law can be enforced while it's going through the process. And so we expect this law to go to the Supreme Court ultimately. That was sort of the intention when it was designed. That's what a lot of the bill authors have said. And so whenever that happens, be it in 2-3 weeks, hopefully soon, then we'll get a more definitive answer.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, right? The Department of Justice under the Biden regime right now is saying, they're pushing back on all of this. But when you talk to people in the administration, they pretend like they are about, you know, defending our borders and that they are about protecting the country. And there's really is no crisis right now at the southern border. But the Department of Justice is saying, Texas, you don't have a right to stop these people who are breaking laws from coming into your state. What is their actual argument behind all of this? I don't even understand how they're able to push back on any of this, because the state has the right to defend itself. That's a constitutional right. So where are they coming off with all of this?
Well, the state has a right to defend itself and certainly has a right to go after state crimes like illegal entry. I mean, this is literally what we're seeing happen all along the southern border in Texas, less so, I will say, in recent weeks than had been happening last year. A lot of that has actually moved over to Arizona and California, as you've certainly seen reports of, but it's still happening in large numbers in Texas. Those who are opposed to this say, well, you know, immigration is a federal responsibility, but you know, what do you do whenever the federal government abdicates its responsibility in such a way that you see a state like Texas bearing the brunt? Remember, Texas has the largest border with Mexico. Texas is bearing the brunt of this. The national government, federal government under Biden, has completely abdicated their responsibility. And a lot of people are saying, look, it's time for Texas to fight back, regardless of what the administration says.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I thought I was a little late to the game, but I'm glad that they're doing this now because Texas is being invaded. You know, we had a member of one of the journalists over at Border Hawk on our show the other day, and they went through a tunnel. I mean, these cartels are making tunnels and sneaking people in. So just imagine our borders right now are wide open. They're allowed to come in right now. And we have people still making tunnels, which probably means that these are the worst of the worst people who might actually get stopped by Border Patrol are trying to sneak in. So Texas has every right to defend themselves. And I think it's egregious that the federal government is sitting here stepping in and saying, no, you must allow these people to just come in. It's disturbing. I want to talk about one of my favorite attorney generals in the history of attorney generals, Ken Paxton. Ken Paxton's pushing back and he's very aggressive about this. He's fighting the DOJ on all of this, but then also there's other fronts that he's fighting on, and it has nothing to do with the border issues that we currently have, of course, but he just recently filed a lawsuit against two adult websites. And for those of you at home right now, those are porn websites, obviously, but he has been notorious for going after these porn companies because they refuse to comply with Texas law, which makes them verify the user's age before going on there. And you have to be 18 years or older, according to their state law, to be able to use those platforms. So tell us about these two new lawsuits. I think this is great.
Yeah, you literally just saw a few weeks ago, the Attorney General Ken Paxton filed a lawsuit against the company that owns the largest pornography distributor in the United States, which is Pornhub. The state of Texas had filed a law, had passed a law rather, just last year, saying, "Hey, we're not going to kick you out of Texas. You can operate, but verify users' ages, right? That way, we don't have minors accessing these websites, which we know there's been study after study just shows you." How horrific this is for the development and for the mental health of children, right? And so a pretty small step, I would say, and yet you see this big outcry from these pornography distributors who are, I think, showing their real intentions, right? You literally had Pornhub shut down in Texas last week. They said, well, we don't want to verify users' ages. We're not going to even operate in the state, which I say, great. You know, that's a great intention there, but also goes to show you they would rather do that than verify users' ages, I think tells you a lot. Well, now today you've got two more pornography distributors that are being sued under this same law that carries massive fines. I mean, it's $10,000 a day, but then it's $250 or $25,000, one of the two, if a child is knowingly exposed because they didn't do age verification. These fines add up, and you actually can get to a point where not only will they be forced to either verify users' ages or, you know, preferably just stop operating in the state, but they'll owe millions of dollars in the process.
Yeah, well, that's great. I mean, Arden Young has been doing great work on this too, going through Pornhub and really exposing all of these corporations and how they just don't care, like you said, about verifying users' ages. The fact that they're okay with children looking at their content, like adults, we could have a debate back and forth about what it does to adults, but you're an adult, you should be able to make your own decisions. But the children cannot make decisions on their own like this. These are significant. And so I think this is really important. And I'm excited for Texas for doing this. I think this is really important. The other states only to follow and jump in line on this as well, because it's really, really destroying younger generations. Brandon, you've been doing great work over at Texas Scorecard. We greatly appreciate it. Everybody else over there too. We're great, great fans of Cambry. And, you know, Sarah Gonzalez is now with you guys. So yes. Again, folks, make sure you head over to Texas Scorecard right now if you want to be in the know. They've got everything going on over there. So take a look at the website. Brandon, thank you for joining us. I always appreciate talking to you. Remember when Joe Biden blocked Americans from having access to life-saving medications during the pandemic? Well, even the most prepared Americans weren't prepared for what they had in store for us. If we've learned anything from 2020, it's that we all need to be prepared. And the best way to do so is with the medical emergency kits from the Wellness Company. It's one of the best things you can do for you and your family, and you won't find anything like it in stores or at the pharmacy. This prescription kit contains 8 life-saving medications, including ivermectin, amoxicillin, and Z-Pak, plus a guide that tells you exactly how to use all of these tools. Every American should have at least one of these kits right now in their homes. And ordering these kits is super, super easy. It takes less than 2 minutes to do, folks. Go to twc.health/Brianna. That's twc.health/Brianna. And when you use promo code Brianna, you'll get 10% off plus free shipping. That's what you guys get for just listening to today's program. It's amazing. Again, folks, that's twc.health/Brianna. Now, once you pay, you'll have to fill out a form. It's an intake form, of course. And then you'll get these products sent directly to your door. No waiting for an expensive doctor's visit. And let's be honest, guys, they're not going to give you these prescriptions if you do head over to the doctor. All 8 prescriptions will be at your doorstep in approximately 2 weeks. And you know what, folks? Honestly, it's about the same cost as a doctor's visit, probably even a little less. So again, folks, you've got to head over right now to twc.health/Brianna. And then when you use promo code Brianna, you're going to get 10% off and free shipping just for listening to today's program. For quite some time now, Dr. Kirk Elliott has been warning you guys about the potential bank failures that are on the horizon. Well, he's not alone. Big bank CEOs are also warning Americans about this. One is even projecting that there's about to be 500 bank failures this year. And the FDIC doesn't even have all of the funds to back the money that you're depositing at the bank. So let's bring in Dr. Kirk Elliott to discuss. Dr. Kirk, thank you so much for jumping on with us today. We greatly appreciate it. You called it. I know you've been talking about this for quite some time now, but it seems like finally the mainstream media is starting to catch on to the potential bank failures that are on the horizon. So tell us, what are we hearing now?
So this goes way back, and I have been sounding the alarm for a while. I was just talking to David and Stacey White at Flyover Conservatives, and we did a show on their network back in January of 2023, talking about how FDIC only had 1.7% of all bank deposits insured. And it's like, oh my word, this is terrible. And then what happened in March and April? Silicon Valley, Signature Bank, Credit Suisse, First Republic, Silvergate Bank, they all went into FDIC receivership, right? So they went under. Well, what happened between then, a year ago, and today? All those bank failures that happened took that FDIC insurance amount from 1.7% of assets to 0.74. They used up more than half of their assets with 5 bank failures, right? So here's where it gets a little bit more squirrely. And why didn't we have more bank failures then? Well, they instituted a program called the Federal Bank Temp Funding Program, the BTFP, which was emergency funding for failing banks. So it was like this lifeline to these banks of just stimulus money. And that's why we didn't have more bank failures. But that program, Brianna, stopped. It sunset. It expired on March 11th. So a week ago, that's gone. So the next bank that goes into like financial trouble, right, they're not going to get emergency funding. So therefore, they're going to fail and FDIC, it would kick in. But FDIC hardly has any money, right? So we have to realize all of this happened with 5 big bank failures or regional bank failures. There's a CEO of a large national real estate company that actually came out on Yahoo Finance. Mm-hmm. And this guy, what do they do when you're developing subdivisions and commercial real estate? They're getting bank loans all the time. So he said, we're going to see 500 or more banks fail over the next 2 years. 500, not 5. With 5, it took half of FDIC's available assets. I mean, what if this guy is the biggest dunce on the planet and he's so far wrong that only 10 banks fail? Not 500, 10, which is still, look what happened with 5 banks failing. So I don't think that he's wrong. I think we're going to see, this to me is the biggest financial news story of 2024, is we're going to see a second round of bank failures, which is going to be bigger and badder and worse than the first one. I mean, why do I think that? You look at what's happening in the banking world, and in the last quarter, banks' profits fell by 44% in just the last quarter. See, there's no profitability there. There's delinquencies that are on the rise, which means late payments. After a series of delinquencies, people go into default. Either they cancel the loan at the bank or they just simply file for bankruptcy. This is the ugly world financially that we're living in as a function of bad economic policy coming out of the White House because the BRICS nations stripping away the demand for the U.S. dollar, which forces us to print because there's no demand for our currency anymore. I mean, literally, Brianna, this is bad. And I think when you look at your brain, my brain, everybody's brain, it's like banks should be the safest thing in the world. You know, perception wise, our money in the bank, it's out of the markets. So we think, right? It's like, it's just safe. It's just like, well, this money just sitting in the bank, I'm saving for a rainy day. What do banks invest in? When you put money in the bank, what do they do with it? It's not just a big wad of hundreds sitting in the bank vault, just sitting there doing nothing. No, they invested into stocks, bonds, mutual funds, real estate companies. The same thing you and I would invest in as individuals, they just do it on a larger scale because they're a bank. So as those things continue to fail for us, it's failing for banks. And because of Biden's ridiculously awful, horrible economic plan for America, you've got reducing wages, rising unemployment, prices going up because they're printing money like there's no tomorrow. You raise interest rates to slow down that inflation. That's a recipe for disaster. And so this is why I think the acceleration of bank failures is going to happen. So as I look at that and think, okay, what can we do? Oh, this article you just put on the screen, that's a brilliant one. See, it's not just the CEO of a real estate company that's saying banks are going to fail. Jerome Powell, chairman of the Federal Reserve, says there's going to be bank failures. Wait a second. Isn't he in charge of the banks?
Yeah.
And he's the thing that he's in charge of is going to fail. Dude, they stink. They stink at their job, but they're at this point where there is no other outcome. When you use other people's money and that money dries up, you're either forced to print your way out of it or just call it quits and say, well, there's no more. See, why in the world, Brianna, would a government in an election year, knowing that banks are the safe haven thing, and if there's a run on the banks, if people lose confidence in the banks, they lose confidence in the whole financial system. So why would they stop that emergency funding? Why? Either A, they simply don't have the money. They know that they can't continue printing because they're going to have to raise interest rates and people are already tapped out. Or B, I know this is going to sound conspiratorial, but I don't intend it to be. It's just reality. They want it to fail. I think they might want the banking system to fail because they have a grand plan to be the saviors of all humanity financially, and that central bank digital currency, and that's what they want to institute. But you know, you're smart. Would you ever say, oh, the central bank digital currency thing, this is sweet. I like this plan because, you know, they have the ability to cut you off from buying or selling if your ideology doesn't match up with theirs. It's spyware on the bank account. They actually control all of our assets instead of us. We gave them ownership. Who in their right mind would say that's a good idea? Nobody. I don't care if you're on the left or on the right. It's a horrible idea that not anybody is going to like. But if the banking system fails and people can't pay their rent, they can't feed their kids, they can't pay their mortgage, they can't pay their utilities, they can't live life, as humans, it's human nature, we will give up our freedoms in exchange for perceived security and peace. So if you want to usher in something that's so horrible and it's all about people control, central bank digital currency will not fix a broken system. It's all about people control. You create a crisis so people will want what you have. But so that's my conspiracy brain thinking, right? So So either that's prediction. The outcome, or the other outcome is simply that they run out of money. The end result, same. It doesn't matter. Whether either one of those options, the end result is the same, and that is banks are running out of money, and we are about to see bank failures, which I think is the biggest financial story of this year. So what's the solution? Get your money out of the banks. If you have excess money in the banks, I would get it out. But then what? Then I would allocate it into something that's out of that system, something that's real, something that's never gone to zero, which is a tangible asset. Things never go to zero, Brianna. Yeah. Groceries don't, bicycles don't, cars don't, houses don't. Nothing goes to zero. If it's a thing, it always has an intrinsic value. Gold and silver are things. They will never go to zero. It's your safe haven in a time like this.
Yeah. And I think that's really important. We're constantly talking about silver and how silver is on the rise. The cost of it's on the rise, which is a good thing for people at home right now because they could buy in right now when it's not at its highs. And I think that's really critical here. So your solution are these assets, these tangible assets. Let's talk a little bit about precious metals. That's often what we talk about. There's a lot of news out there right now where people are bragging about silver. So talk to us about that.
Well, silver surpassed $27 in Asia. It surpassed $25 an ounce here. So here's the thing. Silver is kind of sideways action for the last year. It's gone up and it's gone down. I mean, it's still going up. It's up tremendously over the last year, but nothing like what we're going to see. So when it creeped above $25, and you see on the chart, it's right there right now. It's at $24.96. But at that $25 threshold, it actually peaked its head above a 15-year moving average in the silver price. So that ceiling, which has been resistance, is now our floor. So the resistance moving forward is gone. Look at that chart right there that you have on the screen. See that last little blip up? It peaked above a 15-year moving average. There's no resistance above that. This is exciting for anybody who's allocated into silver, who's thinking about going into silver. The time has never been better because of where we are with a 15-year moving average being surpassed, and there's no longer an anchor weighing on the price of silver. It's now like a balloon pulling it up.
Yeah. I think it's really important. And I know our audience at home probably has some questions regarding becoming an investor in silver and gold. And you're the guy that I go to for advice. So we've made it easier for them. If they head over to briannagold.com, there's a little form that they could fill out with their basic contact information. And all they have to do is enter in that information. Then somebody from your team will actually reach out to them, a scheduler, to make an appointment. And then they can make that appointment and have a discussion with you or a member of your team regarding everything that they have questions wise and how they could, you know, secure their family's future. Because right now is the time to do this before it's too late. You don't want to be on the outs when these banks are failing, looking to somehow save what you do have if they didn't blow it for you already. So again, now is the time to do so. So again, folks, all you have to do is head over to briannagold.com. We've made it as simple as possible. That's BREANNAGOLD.com. Fill out the form. I've done it myself. Somebody from your team, Dr. Kirk Elliott's team, is going to give you a call, schedule an appointment, and then you meet with somebody else from his team to go over your financial goals. It's really important, Dr. Kirk, that people do this now because, gosh, if you wait any longer, it could really be a bad situation. Do you have anything else that you'd recommend right now for our audience besides just that? I think that's probably the most important thing, though, is to get on that phone call with you guys or a member of your team to kind of plan everything out.
It is. And it's a free consultation. I mean, there's no risk in a call, because what we want to do is ask you what your dreams are, what your fears are, what your goals are, what your income needs are, what you want to accomplish. Every one of us, I don't care how young or old you are, you want to accomplish one thing, that your money outlives you, right? The only way that you can do that is to outpace inflation with your investments, be in the right place at the right time, grow and thrive. So give us a call and we'll map out a strategy for success moving forward using tangible assets like physical silver right now to take advantage of this, not just this price move, but the fundamental realities of the world that we're living in, of the unsustainable debt, the inflationary pressures, the political chaos, this geopolitical conflict, everything that's ravaging the world, that's bad news, is actually good news for tangible assets like gold and silver. So we just can take advantage of that and have a smile on our face.
Yeah. Yeah. I think everyone at home probably wants a sense of relief as well. So that's why this is so important. So everyone head over to briannagold.com right now, fill out that form. Like I mentioned, somebody from his scheduling team will reach out, find a good time for you and his team to speak. And then you guys can go over all your financial goals. It's really important to do this now. If you keep tossing it off and waiting, you might be in a really bad situation. So again, it's briannagold.com. Dr. Kirk Elliott, we always love talking to you. So thank you for joining us. You guys, I've said it once before, so I'm going to say it again. And under the Biden regime, I've never been more worried about my financial future. I called my good friend, Dr. Kirk Elliott, because I wanted to come up with a plan put in place to make sure I was secure. And he came with a plan for me to invest in silver.
I'm rich.
I've got my silver. I'm feeling so much better about my future. I highly recommend you give him a call and just chat with his team. 720-605-3900. Now you could also head over to his website if you'd like to schedule an appointment. It's KirkElliottPhD.com/Brianna. And if you enjoyed that segment, make sure you hit that like button. And if you want to see the news before it becomes the news, you have to subscribe to our channel. And well, if you have a liberal friend that you're looking to save, make sure you share this content with them.